Steve Sadie for Floyd Fish. This case involves the question whether a conviction under the Oregon possession of a destructive device statute constitutes a crime of violence under the guidelines that increase a sentence by 6 levels for being in possession of a firearm while a felon. The court made its decision based on a finding that the conviction involved use and therefore was covered under the first clause of the second prong of the crime of violence test. The government has conceded that, in fact, the statute is purely possessory and therefore cannot stand under that reasoning, and suggests an alternative ruling that it should be affirmed based on the or otherwise clause.
Are you asking us to hold that possession of a bomb does not involve conduct that presents serious potential risk of physical injury to others?
That's exactly what I believe is required under this court's decision in Wenner. We provided this by Rule 28J letter on January 28th. In that case, the court looked at the exact same guideline section and said that where you have burglary of a dwelling specifically mentioned, that foreclosed going to the or otherwise clause because it had already been considered.
Okay, but I don't understand how you can equate burglary, which could be burglary of a coin-operated device, it could be burglary of a fenced yard. I don't see how you can equate that with a statute that makes it illegal to possess a bomb, and how we could say that possession of a bomb does not create a potential risk of injury to others, categorically.
The Sentencing Commission has already categorically considered and rejected that mere possession constitute a crime of violence by using the word use in the first clause. The use of explosives or destructive devices is explicitly considered, yes, that is a crime of violence.
That's using it.
Yes.
Then they have or, and then they have something else that you can do.
And what Wenner says is you don't go to the or otherwise clause because of three rules of statutory construction. First of all, they say that the specific trumps the general. If the Guidelines Commission has already considered use and decided that that covers it, then they've already decided that possession, a broader category, is not included. That also goes with the rule of statutory construction that we don't have surplusage. If use in the first clause doesn't mean anything, that it can also include possession, it's surplusage, and that is, again, against the rules of statutory construction. And the third rule that Wenner cites too, which is also directly applicable, is the danger of having an overly broad definition compared with the state statute and the federal definition. So what we're basically arguing is that under Wenner, that this issue has already been considered and rejected. Once the government has conceded that the first clause does not apply, which they have, Wenner says you don't go to the second clause because it's already been considered explicitly. Now, we have set out an argument that if we were not to get past that first argument, there are alternative grounds for addressing the concern that the court's expressing, and I'm glad to go to those. But I believe that the most important thing to try to convey in this argument is that the court, after the filing of the opening brief, has ruled in a case that I believe is directly controlling, that once there is a specific consideration in the first clause of the second prong of the test, you cannot go to the or otherwise clause. Assuming that we are there, even that, for three different reasons, is not something that is a crime of violence under the statute. The first reason focuses on, we switch our orientation from possession and use to destructive device. And that is that under the Oregon statute, there is a key difference between destructive device in state statute and federal, and that is that the federal statute says that if it is not designed or redesigned for use as a weapon, it's not a destructive device. That requirement is missing under the state statute, so it is categorically overbroad. And again, it's not categorically overbroad like Taylor looked at burglary. It's overbroad in the sense of, for example, larceny, which is, you say, that categorically never requires an element of force or risk, even if it's a pled-down robbery. Because What Taylor tells us is we never look to the underlying facts. It's a categorical approach. We're looking at the statute and the judicially noticeable facts.
And that is so sometimes you take a step beyond. We're dealing here with an indictment that your client was convicted or pleaded guilty to, making specific reference to a metal pipe bomb. Now, assuming metal pipe bomb is sort of a damning description of the object in question.
In the first level, we don't go to the individual facts of the case because the elements of the offense do not include the...
I understand that, but sometimes you do go beyond.
And if you did go beyond, here, we don't have any judicially noticeable facts. I've cited in the supplemental to the Payadas-Galan case, but all that case follows other decisions of this court that hold that the information or indictment is never enough. It's not enough to have the information indictment or a pre-sentence report. What you have to have is a judgment or a plea colloquy that creates an element. So first of all, we don't even get there because there's not an element required of use or designing as a weapon. Second, the government did not put on any evidence regarding the judgment or the plea colloquy, so we only have the charging instrument, which the courts have uniformly held, you don't go to. Then you go to the... If we still needed to go to another level here, the facts from the police reports that the defendant put into evidence to show that it was a exotic firework rather than anything that was causing any... the type of danger that the federal statute perhaps is concerned about. Again, that evidence was uncontroverted on his statement, challenging the nature of it. It was.
I don't see where an exotic firework would be covered under the Oregon statute. I mean, it doesn't seem to cover flares or sparklers or things of that sort. It seems to cover bombs, grenades, rockets having a propellant, missiles, mines. I mean, it doesn't talk about exotic fireworks and.
A bomb is a very broad category of things. It can include things that are used for blowing stumps, for entertaining on the 4th of July or New Year's Day, for illegal fishing. There's all kinds of things that that type of device can be used for that are totally... And again, we're not even talking about use. We're talking about possession. So even the sophomoric curiosity that could result in possession is not the type of thing that should categorically be considered a crime of violence. And with the court's permission, I'd reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Michael Brown appearing on behalf of the government. Let me begin with the point that I think counsel is attempting to make with respect to the breadth of the state statute, and frankly, that point reflects...
Well, why don't we start with Leonard? Doesn't that seem to be the most difficult problem you have?
At first blush, perhaps.
Yeah.
But remember,
to the second blush, then.
The problem with the dissent's effort to get that case to the or otherwise clause was that the crime in question was burglary of a residence. And that offense is specifically included... identified burglary of a dwelling. And the argument in Winter was, what does dwelling mean? And does it necessarily have to be a building as opposed to some other kind of a structure or other kind of space that's delineated as a residence? That was the debate in Winter. Whether the state statute burglary of a dwelling, of a residence, encompassed more than was contemplated by the very specific provision of 4B1.2. Our case is different than Winter.
Yeah, but their case may be different in the facts from Winter. But in the Winter decision, Section C, catch-all provision, the whole analysis is whether you can, when something's dealt with specifically, the subject is dealt with specifically, whether you can then use the catch-all provision to broaden it.
That is absolutely the point. The point that I would want to make is that in Winter, the discussion was all about whether this conduct prohibited by statute fell within burglary of a dwelling. In our case, the specific provision the counsel would like to raise as a barrier to the consideration of the catch-all phrase is the provision that, as a matter absolutely in every case, the use of an explosive, will be, any crime that prohibits the use of an explosive will be categorically a crime of violence. The position of government is that use of an explosive is more expansive, if you would, than the possession of a bomb. Those are different things, and that the fact that the Guideline Commission decided to define absolutely categorically that the use of any explosive would be a crime of violence does not lead to the conclusion, unavoidably, that the possession of a bomb would not be also a crime of violence under the catch-all. Our position is...
How about possession of an explosive? Would that be under the catch-all?
My position would be I'd be in a much more difficult position to argue that if the crime that he'd been convicted of was possession of an explosive, there was nothing more. Because remember, we cannot, based on the Taylor categorical approach, we cannot go to the facts. So we would be stuck, if you would, with looking at the elements of the offense. And if the crime to which he'd been convicted of had been the mere possession of an explosive, our position, I think, would be weakened. That's not what he pled guilty to in state court. He pled guilty to the possession of a bomb. And I'd like to reach...
Well, he pled guilty to possession of a destructive device.
Which, by definition, now we can go to the state statute. We can go to the state statute. And if we look at the state statute, two things...
How do we know this was the point Mr. Sadie was making. How do we know he pled guilty to the indictment as charged?
Based on the judge.
He says you can't look at the indictment, you can't look at the charging document, you have to look at the plea colloquy, and he said a few other things along those lines. How do we know that that's what he...
Our recollection is, and I regret that I don't have it in front of me today, but my recollection is that the defendant actually introduced a copy of the judgment, which reflected the fact that he had been convicted of a violation of 166.382. I don't think there's been any dispute about that. But that was, in fact, the crime he pled guilty to.
No, that's the statutory crime. But what does the statute cover?
The statute covers these items. It defines as a destructive device any of the following items which include an explosive component. So you have to have an explosive component, and the item that would be involved would have to be a bomb, a grenade, a rocket having a propellant charge of more than 4 ounces, and a missile having an explosive or incendiary charge more than 1/4 ounce or mine. In other words, they have categorically identified items which by their inherent nature are extremely dangerous, the kinds of items which create a serious potential risk of injury to another person. Now, one of the points I want to make here in oral argument that I failed to make in my brief, regrettably, is that indeed that statute does. It is more limited, as limited as the federal statutes that also address explosives. Mr. Sadie suggests that, well, there's no provision that the item has to be specifically designed as a weapon. Well, the reality is that, indeed, the statute does not include those terms, but it does specifically provide that a destructive device does not include any device which is designed primarily or redesigned primarily for use as a signaling, pyrotechnic, line-throwing, safety, or similar device. In other words, if, in fact, this device were designed primarily as a pyrotechnic, which the defendant would want us to believe at this point, although that, I go back to this point, that inquiry is forbidden. The district court didn't make that inquiry. It should not have made that inquiry because it's prohibited by the categorical approach. But if, in fact, he pled guilty to the possession of a bomb, which is not a bomb, his complaint is not... His concern should be addressed to that conviction, not to the calculation of his offense level in his new conviction for possession of a firearm by a felon. The state statute is as limited as the federal statute. Simply stated, it is. It's no more expansive, no more broad than either of the federal statutes. Any of the federal statutes you find in Title 18 or Title 26 that relate to the use of the possession of explosives. So
I think I may have missed your point here, because the broad problem is that the statute covers more than use, it covers possession. I take it now you're referring to destructive device versus explosive.
I'm sorry.
I'll let you explain it first, but I missed the point you're trying to make.
The point I'm trying to make is that the state statute that prohibits the possession of a destructive device, i.e. a bomb, in our case it's a bomb. We're not worried about missiles and rockets and mines. We're talking about a bomb. But the state statute that prohibits the possession of a bomb is, in fact, fashioned in such a way that it takes out from the coverage of that statute items that are primarily designed for pyrotechnic purposes. The state statute doesn't prohibit the possession of pyrotechnics. That's the point. And to that extent, it is commensurate with the federal statutes that it deal with destructive devices or bombs. So I recognize that going back to my first blush, that the argument that we can't get to the catch-all provision would seem to be formidable. It is not, because in this case, what is categorically included is the provision of the specifically identified offense is the use of an explosive. The crime that he was convicted of was possession of a bomb. And it's for that reason that we believe that you can get to the catch-all provision if you can. And once you get to the catch-all provision, continue to deal with the issue categorically. Once you get to the catch-all provision, you look categorically at the offense that he was convicted of, you must come to the conclusion that possession of a bomb does create a serious potential risk of injury to another person. One of the things that can be confusing in the discussion of the definition of crime of violence is that it's defined slightly different in different settings. Our definition is, under the catch-all phrase, is a serious potential risk of injury to another. If you look at the 924C definition, it talks about a substantial risk that force would be used against another in the commission of an offense. If you look under 2L, there's yet another definition. But our definition for this case it comes to us in 4B1.2, and it is, in fact, the definition of a conduct which creates a serious potential risk of injury to another person. The court, our review is de novo. In this case, the conclusion ought to be that this does qualify as a crime of violence. Thank you for your patience today.
I get to be a textualist. The argument I just heard says that we should be, on policy grounds, distinguishing and treating differently explosives and destructive devices. I refer you to Commentary 1 that says the context set forth expressly charged in the count of which the defendant was convicted involved use of explosives, paren, including any explosive material or destructive device. Now, if the Sentencing Commission has not seen fit to make a distinction between the two things, I think that it is incumbent upon us to follow what is their clear message, which is that we have considered that. We require use. Mere possession is not going to be considered categorical. We don't even go to the or otherwise.
What was that you're reading from?
First Application Note 1 of 4B1.2, Definition of Crime of Violence, subsection capital B. And which I've incorporated in the section describing the relevant guidelines upon which we are relying. Second, regarding the scope of the state statute, it is identical to the federal statute except in missing the weapons. If that weapons doesn't mean anything, are we reducing that to surplusage? Again, for the same reason that Wenner applies, there should be no surplusage in considering the statute. There is a difference, and it's a difference that matters. In thinking about the other types of devices that are different, that are not mentioned in the statute, of course a different rule applies. But even those cases should be looked at very narrowly because they have their origins in a mistake. That is that the cases that the government talks about rely on Dunn, which is a 1991 case that basically said that when talking about some exotic weapons, that because felon in possession of firearms is categorically a crime of violence, then this should be also. And of course, we know from Stinson that the Supreme Court has held that under the same guideline category, that mere possession of a firearm by Charlie Manson or anybody else, dangerous as all get out, that that is not considered a crime of violence. So that it's, we're not talking about potentiality, we're talking about usage, not possession.
I was trying to find, I was looking through the book here, and I guess I must have left it in the office. Where's a copy of the state judgment of conviction?
Page 22 of the excerpt of record is the indictment. But there is no judgment in the record.
Okay, that's what I was getting at. I have the indictment. But
there is no judgment. And that was one of our layers of the argument that we made, that saying that look at all this effort to go beyond behind the statute is basically fundamentally attacking the rationale of Taylor, which said no mini trials, it's burdensome and unfair. You look at the statute.
I may have misunderstood Mr. Brown. I thought he said that the copy of the state judgment was presented to the judge.
I thought it was. I was thinking.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you
both very much. The case is argued and submitted. The court will stand in recess for the day.
Thank you.